I'm just going to start by sort of, you know, like we discussed, just asking you about sort of the background to your being here, what brought you here, and sort of what some of your experiences were right at the beginning. So why don't you tell me about when you came here and why did you decide to come to the US?
The motivation behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, I came in August 21st, 1991. That was the exact date I landed at JFK Airport. But for my background, I came here for graduate studies at UNC Chapel Hill in public health, health policy and administration. Prior to that, I had a government position with the Ministry of Health, Bangladesh, as a dental surgeon working public health work in rural areas. I had a dental surgery degree from Dhaka University, Bangladesh, and I just thought it would help my career further a lot if I had a master's from a recognized university. Talked to my friends who had a lot, who were physicians, were all already doing their master's here in public health. One of them suggested that UNC has a very good program considering the out-of-state tuition rates compared to other universities. And I thought I'd apply. They accepted, and the other places I applied was Ann Arbor, Michigan. They had accepted there too, but North Carolina being warmer, I decided to come here. I had no clue what I was coming into, which is that I was accepted and I'm going. And my background was such that I really wasn't expecting any kind of independent work apart from education. I wasn't mentally prepared for living alone and doing everything alone and with very little help. But I came, and the first semester was terribly hard. I landed, and within a week I decided I'm going back. There's no way I'm going to complete it. And I made up my mind, and then talked to my father pretty often, and he said that, well, finish the semester. You have to give a try to a country before you can leave it at least 3-4 months.
Right.
So I just did it. I stuck through the semesters, not really liking it, very depressed. In the first 3 months, I had no contact with any other subcontinental or Bangladeshi person. So I really felt like an alien, till a professor of mine introduced me to another professor who taught in Duke, and I got to know my fellow community members.
Yeah. So you came in 91. Did you, when you were on your way here, did you ever imagine you would be here, what, 8 years now?
When I was on the plane, I already had second thoughts. Why am I flying off the ground that I know very well?
Yeah.
Why am I leaving the family and the support and the, let's just say, the ease of living and comfort of something known or something totally unknown?
Yeah.
And then I guess I answered that. I said, it's my wanderlust, you know, and if I don't make it, fine, I'll come back. But I never imagined I would stay 8 years. And I think after the third year of living here, I decided that I would stay here and try to make a life of mine here. Prior to that, I was going to go back home, and I was absolutely determined.
So right at the point where you felt you made that decision of I'm going to be here and not go back, was it more about America or was it more about Bangladesh? Do you see what I'm trying to say? That was the decision more about because you wanted to live in America, or was it more about that I don't want to go back to Bangladesh?
My heart still wants to go back to Bangladesh. That's where my home is. And I think America will always be a home, a second home, but never my first home. To be very honest, the reasons are far more deeper and very personal. The reason I decided to stay back was sort of a stubborn decision making that, okay, I came here, I got my degree, if I go back home, there are a lot of expectations, not from my immediate family, but around, oh, she couldn't make it in America.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons I stayed back. Another thing was, I spent so much time already, 4 years, might as well try to make the rest of it here. And that was basically my motivation. Otherwise, the second thought was, because of the global politics, America is the forerunner in political power.
Yeah.
And sure. Bangladesh had always had its political problems with this mm-hmm. party coming in, that party going out. A lot of strikes, and I just thought if I could stay here and make my mm-hmm. life worth living, mm-hmm. I might even be able to do something mm-hmm. in public health there, maybe from the country's capital, like DC.
Make
policies.
Right. So I was next going to ask you what you consider your home to be now and why, and I think you've already
answered spoke. That.
Yeah. So, okay. Do you at all interact with what you would consider sort of your community here, or what would the term community even mean to you here in this context in America?
I believe the community feeling is very strong among most Bangladeshis, and mm-hmm. they interact very much with each other, and mm-hmm. Because most of the people who are from Bangladesh over here in Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Durham areas are either going to college or studying their master's or higher studies or working in a field mm-hmm. relevant to the studies. I per se have not been much in touch with my community mm-hmm. only because there are certain limitations right now, not having a car, not having the time, mm-hmm. not being in my field of work yet as I want it to be.
Okay.
And that.
But you feel that they as a community are quite open to that. So they, okay. Otherwise, there's a lot of interaction between sort of other Bangladeshis who you know.
There is a very strong, because they celebrate mm-hmm. the national holidays among themselves on a Saturday. So mm-hmm. the communities are pretty strong.
Okay. Do you interact a lot with Americans, as in friends, as well as American families?
I do interact with a lot of American friends, and I think, to tell you the truth, I have, because of my work and because of the way I'm living my life right now, I interact more with Americans mm-hmm. than any of my community members, mm-hmm. and but with families, I never had much of a chance apart from my older sister's in-laws who are Americans, and maybe on an odd Christmas I'd go out and have to Chicago and have dinner with them or spend Christmas with them. But otherwise, all of the people I interact with are Americans and they're friends.
Mm-hmm. So, could you talk a little bit about your experiences about that? Just to give you an example, when I first came to this country, I really struggled in my first year because I found that I just felt I had no friends, and it took me about a year to adjust to this culture and to realize that very often friendship, the way we understand friendship in the Indian community, is a little different from the concept of friendship understood by a lot of Americans. So once I got over that, I found that I made a lot of American friends. So just using that as an example, what have some of your experiences been? And have they sort of largely been positive or negative or mixed?
Well, I had a very hard time the first year too, only because I thought that, you know, the friends I met at graduate school, on the whole, they were all very open, and they were all very open to me, and I was invited to a lot of do's mm-hmm. and like happy hour and hanging out. Mm-hmm. But maybe because I was new in the country and I wanted to retain myself in my culture, and I was staunch about that, so I didn't do that much.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have friends, I would say, from all walks of life, from mm-hmm. bus drivers to cafeteria workers to sometimes even people who ask money on the streets.
Because
I pass them every day. I've lived in Chapel Hill for mm-hmm. 8 years. I more or less see the same people.
Mm-hmm.
Friends are friends as long as you take them on their basis, on their face value. But yes, I have learned to not to expect the kind of depth I had as friends. Of course, when you're younger, your feelings of friendship and ideas of closeness and bonding with people are much more stronger. because of the busyness of life as you grow older, you realize that friendship you have to take as they are and their face value and not expect or demand more. I don't really have a hard time with making friends or... But I do feel that I still have to explain a lot about myself to even close friends of mine. Right. And I still feel that there are certain things that makes me feel that I am one of them, but I'm still an outsider.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
That's the feeling. And I have worked in places like retail and where all the associates are very friendly and... Mm-hmm. We have great times. Sometimes we even go out now, mm-hmm. Or when we have time to watch movies with this friend or that mm-hmm. friend. But
there's always that one final barrier.
That one final barrier, and it hasn't... I don't know. It isn't anything to do with the race or people. I think it's the Americanness. Because African, I have very good African American friends, and I have very good. White American friends, and for both of them I have felt that I am close only to a certain extent, mm-hmm. but of course my expectations of very closeness is different from the expectations of an American person.
Exactly, and I think that's sort of what I was saying earlier, and that's the same thing that I struggled a lot with, that I was very frustrated initially because I expected that they would expect the same out of a friendship that I would. Mm-hmm. And so once I got to the point where I realized that wouldn't be the case, I was actually able to make some good friends.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yes. But that's still a concern. But then I had to tell myself, this is a different world, it's a different culture, and I just have to accept that.
True. So, that's true. It's a more more independent culture, and I guess independence is taught from very childhood, which we are not taught but thrown into even at the ripe age of 25 or 26 when you come to graduate school. So then you have to learn mm-hmm. to do it all over again on your own.
Yeah.
There's no teaching.
In fact, that's really interesting you mentioned independence, because very often when I've tried to, in my mind, analyze the differences between the Indian culture, even the South Asian culture at large, and the American culture, one thing is that I feel that in the US, what's considered a major handicap, a personal handicap, is actually an asset in our cultures, in that dependence is strongly encouraged in all South Asian cultures, that it's a social value and it's encouraged. And in the US, in contrast, it's something that's discouraged and looked down upon.
Yes. Okay.
And that's across all generations. So, I mean, that presents a very interesting conflict.
Conflict in cultures.
Yeah, and expectations. I'm going to pause this right here and just check very quickly that this is working. Okay, so we are continuing, and again, this is Rajika chatting with Kamal Rehman. So we're going to continue talking. I'd like to ask you a little bit now about your family and your community back home, and if you could share a little bit about that, and how you keep in touch with them, how you feel about the fact that you've been here all this time and they're back there, and sort of how have you struggled with that and sort of reached a level of acceptance in your mind that this is okay, this is how you want it to be?
Well, let's say that I come from a family of five sisters and no brothers, in an Asian culture where usually brothers are important part of the family, and not having a male member in the family, the only role model we ever saw was Dad. And Dad was a very different kind of a person. He wasn't a 9-to-5 worker, he wasn't an engineer, he wasn't a doctor, he was a very prominent movie star, actor, director, producer and writer, but a person who was also physically handicapped. Being such a person's daughter, being part of all that, and also being trying to grow up as a as my mother would say, grow up like everybody else, go to school, excel in studies, and focus only in studies and nothing creative. I think we tried to manage to do all that, and motivation was everyone's going to do higher studies, so I came for higher studies for that. But as you were saying, that staying away 8 years, which of course was my personal decision, they wanted me to come back. How I have managed to accept that, being away from them 8 years, not being able to go home. The only way I can communicate with them is through the telephone, which I do about once a month, and that takes some of the edge of the craving to hear their voices. And to tell you the truth, I don't think I have ever really accepted the fact that I have spent 8 years away from my family, because in our culture, family means a lot. And because my father had two strokes since then, I just felt that I had spent valuable time away from him and not in service for him. And these are the issues that sometimes are deep back in my mind, that after all life is finite, and if I don't spend some of it with my close ones when they need me, what is there, what will I have to look back on, that okay, mm-hmm. I have done my duty and all. That's the only issue that I have regrets over. Apart from that, I'm quite adjusted to my way of life that I'm living now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I will ever be adjusted to the fact that 8 years or 10 years, or mm-hmm. how many years I've spent away from them.
Oh. Yeah, I think that's something I really appreciate, that it's very rarely that one comes to terms with that sentiment. It's just something you accept as part of living here,
that's,
I guess,
true.
Or living anywhere else, I guess, in another country away from your home. That it's there's never that point where you say, I accept this and this is fine with me.
Fine, yeah. With me. That never is there.
It's never fine. You just keep doing things that'll.
That you feel that you have to do what you have to do right now, but
yeah.
But it, in the back of your mind, something in your mind tells you that spending time with your family, working there,
mm-hmm.
and if anything happens to my dad, God forbid, then I'd not have any regrets. Okay, I was of service, and
mm-hmm.
now that part is gone.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think that sense of community that you had back in Bangladesh is reflected here in any way in the life that you live?
I would say there's no resemblance at all to what the life I lived back home, even the sense of community. Sure, I was a newly graduated dental surgeon, but I was still living with my parents, and I had relations distant and close,
mm-hmm.
Dropping in all the time. You're having interactions of community festivals, like your Eid festivals, your Muslim festivals and your Hindu festivals,
mm-hmm.
where everyone goes regardless of any religion. Even the Christmas holidays have far more meaning,
mm-hmm.
had far more meaning there, because you had so many Christian friends who were invited
mm-hmm.
out. Here, more or less, it has been isolated, because here more or less people spend time with their own families and not go out of their way to invite
mm-hmm.
outsiders for their family reunions during Christmas or Thanksgiving. And there the life was more protected. Here the life is totally independent. I'm responsible for any kind of, let's just say, any kind of negative situation. I always have to calculate ahead of time whether I should be there, whether waiting for the bus at this time in Durham, for example, at this time, is it safe? Because where those are the things that we never had to worry about, because there was someone or the other always with us.
Mm-hmm.
Independence is fine, but when a lot of your independence is taken away by doing stuff that you really need to spend time on concentrating on yourself or your creativity, which I had the time there. I don't have here. I have to cook meals, full-blown meals after I come back from work at 9:30. I have to cook and clean on my day off. And whatever time I've left after that, I usually spend time either reading or trying to improve the self. And that's and I guess by the time you come to this stage in life, that becomes a very enormous priority.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. One of the things that's really interested me about this project that we involved in Asian Voices, when we initially sort of conceptualized this whole project, one thing that really interested me was how people have changed as individuals after having come to this country, and not just as individuals, but just from my own interaction with a lot of South Asians, and this is true even for myself, I find that it's not just an individual change very often, but it's also tied to gender. And what I find is, and I speak more from the Indian perspective, that Indian men and women go through very different experiences when they come here, and that they evolve very differently. And to me, perhaps that's one of the most fascinating aspects of this project that we're doing. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about A, how you feel you've changed as an individual, and B, how you've changed as a woman. And, you know, if you would feel comfortable talking about that, how this culture has changed those two things for you, if at all.
Well, of course, 8 years in a culture without going back home periodically, like a lot of my friends from Bangladesh do, or had the lucky opportunity to do so. I didn't have that. It has changed me a lot. It has made me more reflective. It also could be something to do with the fact that you're more alone, and it's not in most of your decisions you make alone, most of your strivings you're doing alone. You may have friends, but they're not with you at night when you're going to bed in the next room, like your parents were, or or the rest of your four sisters were. So you don't have that feeling of security. And how it has evolved as me as a woman, I realize strengths in me that I didn't think 8 years back that I had. I would say I've matured at a faster rate, regardless of the fact that from your 20s into your early 30s, there is a growth change and you are reflective because of the decade change. But it has made me mature. Before, somehow, I wouldn't say about all of South Asia, but I don't know, in Indian cultures, regardless whether it's Pakistan, Bangladesh or India, girls or daughters of relatively upper middle class families or upper class families are sort of encouraged to be spoiled or dependent. I wouldn't use the word spoiled, but I would use the word dependent. You are not allowed to drive because your father forbade you. So you come to United States not being able to drive. You can't go out and do grocery shopping because you have never done it, so you have to learn that. You have never cooked in your life because somebody had always cooked, whether it's your mother or whether it was somebody, and you were just... So those are the things that you learn very fast, how to be on your own footstep, and also not to expect the world to do it for you or give it to you. And I would say that for a long time, maybe the first couple of years, I was very upset that I chose to stay here, but I didn't have what I had from home. Meaning, I wanted both worlds at the same time, and I think one thing happens is if a subcontinental girl or a South Asian girl stays here alone, I'm not saying with the support of a husband, it's a whole different story than someone who comes here with her husband who's already has a job and she's a housewife here, and.
I know exactly what you mean, and I agree with that. And when I posed that question to you, I was talking exactly about those types of people like you and me who come here as single independent people and not already in a relationship, because I think if you change, if at all you change, that change is going to be very different if you come here as part of, with a spouse, as opposed to coming here alone and sort of navigating your way around in the culture.
And then finding the best way of dealing and then learning to also respond the way. You end up learning to respond the way they expect you to. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily giving up your identity, but basically you end up behaving and acting in a way that is more common with Americans. And that means, you know, even giving up the image that you are very confident and mature and responsible, which develops anyway by the time you're 8 years. But inside you can still be insecure regardless of the fact that you've developed all these other aspects too. The feeling of insecurity as a single Asian woman in America for the future or for anything, or, you know, the fact that we don't have a support system is there.
Let me sort of ask you a related question, and this is, it's a little personal, so if you say you do not want to address it, that's fine, but just delving into this idea a little more, do you feel, I mean, coming from a very patriarchal, male-dominated society, like India or Bangladesh or Pakistan, do you feel that being in this culture has changed your expectation of relationships between men and women?
Tremendously, but not totally to the point of equality. I a lot of my American friends find me not extremely pretty liberated, even by American standards, but I explain it to them that that's not liberty, that's basic human rights as a as a human being, as an individual. If I, but...
Could you give an example?
Example like, for example, I have, well, this is a sergeant who works at the place that I work at, and we make conversation, and he says, well, what would you do? I said, well, if my husband goes out so many hours a day and with his friends, then he shouldn't mind if I also go out with my friends so many hours, as long as I know, as he knows where he goes. If I can cook and clean after I come back from work, then I expect my husband, regardless whether he's American or Indian or Bangladeshi, to come and help me with the same. And then because, you know, otherwise it gets too much for one single person. Then that person, maybe because he was in his 40s or late 40s, and he says, you are very liberated, you know, even by American standards. A Southern girl from Deep South wouldn't say that or expect that. I said, I don't believe that. Anybody educated or anybody who has some feeling of independence already established within their personality would expect that, regardless of where you he or she is from. And patriarchal family is fine, but I guess it's the feeling of insecurity and being used to a patriarchal society. I still assume that it's the males, which I don't see in America all the time, it's the male's total responsibility to look after the family or household, because that's the role that had always been playing from the very beginning, even from prehistoric times. The men went out and hunted and brought the food in. And the women did the nurturing and the cooking or whatever, grinding. If you see those roles haven't really changed. And I 100% do not believe that, you know, that it's 50-50. Okay, it's 50. If you're earning well, fine, but it still is the male's role to take care of the wife. And be there for support if, and, you know, be the major supportive role, if not financially, but even emotionally, but as an emotional stalwart, the male has to be there.
Right.
And I don't believe in single mothers or single parents bringing up. If it happens, it's very hard work for the mother, but usually, I mean, it's just not...
it's not something you would opt for, but if,
But if it happened, I would probably do my best to rear the child the best, but I could never even visualize myself as a single mother.
Out of choice.
Out of choice, exactly.
Okay, let's see. Some of this stuff doesn't apply to you because you don't have children, so...
Okay.
But is that something you ever think about? About it? I mean, now that you've been here 8 years, I mean, I don't even know if you ever plan on having a family. But if you do, is that something you think about in the future?
All the time.
Bringing kids up in a culture that's different from what you grew up in?
I've always wanted to have a child ever since I was 16. Maybe because I'm crazy about babies. I don't know. To me, they represent, you know, I don't know, they seem creatures from another space or an outer space. They're not adult human beings, their size and shape. But anyway, I didn't have the opportunity to have a child of my own, because I'd like to be, if I bring a child, only when it's completely, when I have a good, stable financial status and all that. But I do think that if I brought up a child in the United States, how would I deal with it? I could put him to public school, but he'll learn a lot of things that I sort of didn't grow up with. And even though I'm a child of the 80s, mm-hmm. I still would not agree with a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
My other thought was, if I was affluent, I would probably send him to a boarding school, maybe in India or Bangladesh, where my mother or someone is around, or an aunt, to, you know, to take keep a check on that on the child,
yeah.
If it's a boy or a girl.
I'm laughing because my mother keeps telling me that's what I should do, because I went to a private boarding school in India, and I went to the same school that she went to. And so she keeps telling me this, that if you decide to settle in the US and you have kids, just send them over to India and I'll send them to the same boarding school.
It's only because I think I'm proud of my culture. I mean, there's a lot of things that are very good with America, but I don't feel the need to be a totally different person and entity, and my children coming to a different entity and saying that, oh, I don't know, I've never been to India, or I can't speak Hindi or Bengali. It's just part of, I think it's a part of the human ego to continue as who you are. And then I would, that's what I thought if I was affluent, send my child to a very good boarding school in India. Of course, my mother has to have access every now and then, because I think a child away from any kind of maternal affection for long doesn't have a healthy upbringing mentally.
Yeah, definitely.
But the child will come back for college when he's strong enough mentally.
Have the best of both education systems,
right.
So to say. Yeah. Just sort of a general question about this sort of geographic area in terms of South Asian immigrants living in Chapel Hill and Carborough. Do you think that these places in general are supportive environments for people from our culture? And if they are, why do you think they are, or if not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Okay. I think the Research Triangle Park area, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, is a good area for Asians to come in, only because some of the best universities are situated in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Duke University, UNC, there's pioneering research going on in these universities, as well as Research Triangle Park. And I do believe a lot of Asians will keep on coming to this area, South Asians mainly, and a lot of different people from different countries of the world, and that will make this area cosmopolitan, and which is what Asians or any other continental person will need to feel not out of place, but to be at place. Mm-hmm. And this is the area that is growing in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I have done some research all around North Carolina in collecting data for the dental school and for the health promotion disease prevention, and it was actual data in really clinical public health situations where, you know, you don't have a very sophisticated equipment system and all that. I do realize those other areas would be a little more harder for Asians to adjust, only because those areas are also not equally acquainted with foreigners, and anywhere human beings will feel differentiated at, they'll feel uncomfortable living. Comfortable. Otherwise, the Research Triangle Park would be my choice to stay here if I stay forever in North Carolina.
Right. Another question just occurred to me, and this is sort of like a concluding question, and I don't really have this on a list or anything, but just hearing you talk, this occurs to me, that do you feel that the American experience has made a difference to how South Asians from each of the different South Asian countries and then different communities within those countries, how they respond and react to each other? Do you think that has changed, that being in America and being through the American experience has changed that?
I do believe that whatever differences they have in their countries, and you have communal differences everywhere, and you see it and read it in the papers all the time, but I have a feeling, and just by observing and just by being with people, or just the way I feel, every time I see a South Asian, doesn't matter if he's from Burma or Sri Lanka, and you know, and I can just tell that he's from South Asia, I feel immediately bonded, and I also feel the other person bonds, because they have a common basis of, if not language, a common cultural basis, common food habit basis, you know, and that sort of, those are very strong aspects of a culture, food and other cultural aspects of living and family life, that I think makes us feel more unified together. And the American aspect is that being in America, I mean, I may be here, a lot of friends say you're very Americanized, but I don't perceive how Americanized I am, because I don't feel I'm as American as them. I'm not as American as apple pie, because I wasn't born or raised here. But I feel the bonding immediately with any South Asian person I see, right, regardless of the background. So I think that makes it a stronger homogeneousness over there as a whole, instead of separate pieces of a pie, you know.
Yeah, that's good to know. Is there anything else you want to talk about? I mean, in general, relating to this, you know, what we've been talking about, or this project, or questions, or anything else that strikes you that I haven't covered that you think would be important to this interview?
I guess you never asked how happy I was here. I guess you would also ask every Asian, however successful, how deeply satisfied or completely satisfied and at peace and with the inner self and the outside that one is.
Right. Yeah. Didn't ask you that.
And I've had the same question. I mean, it's not a study. It's just that I like to see how different are people's responses from my inner feelings. And I've asked everyone, from someone who owns a grocery store to some of the professors of Duke University from Bangladesh. And every one of them seemed to have some kind of a feeling that if things were different at home, that, and if things were... if the social conditions and the situations were different, if there were not so much corruption on grassroots level in places like Bangladesh and India, and there are a lot of corruption, to be very honest.
Oh, absolutely.
Here it is there, but it's so much in a higher circle that you don't see it, because America is a huge country, it's almost like a continent. You don't see it, but it's there. But as long as we don't see it, we see that it's not there.
Right.
So... I believe most of them would want to be home if just the situation was reversed. The same conditions existing there, job-wise, constitution-wise, political stability-wise, they'd rather be there.
Yeah, and I guess that's true for almost any immigrant. Because,
That's for him, unless you're born and raised here, and I have met those too, and you know, they wouldn't, because you relate to your childhood experiences till the age of 16 or 18 the most in your life, and you keep on relating to them.
Right.
Because even when you say, hear an old song, I mean, sometimes I watch, it's funny, but it's 25 years old, but I used to watch MASH when I was 13. It's an all-American thing. It's an all-American medical team going to Korea. But each time I watch MASH, every night my heart gives a twist, because it reminds me poignantly of memories of sitting together, of ideals shared with classmates, all those things come back. So MASH and a lot of stuff reminds you of that period. So
how were you folks watching MASH when you were 13 in Bangladesh?
They used to come in, I think it came in 74.
Huh. Okay. Interesting. I don't know if we had any foreign serials on the Indian National Network, but I think in some ways Bangladesh...
No, Pakistan and Bangladesh are advanced.
Yeah, they opened their market economies much earlier than India did.
Because I used to watch, the same series, remember, they used to show...
Three's Company? No.
Yes, you know, Get Real Smart 99, you know, Get Smart and all this stuff. And I see that with Danny, my friend, he's American. He says, but one thing he said that because I'm 10 years younger than him, he says, oh, you are 12 years. Oh, you're so much younger because he saw it 12 years before.
Right.
But it was the same period that they showed it in Pakistan, Bangladesh. So it's funny that a lot of people say, these things remind you of home.
Yeah.
I said, why? They asked, why? Because of the Korean paddy fields? I said, no, it's not not because of that. It's just the representation brings you memories. Like I was listening to on the radio Pink Floyd's...
Breaking the Wall. Yeah.
Poignantly of my teenagehood when I was a little rebellious.
Yes.
Sneaking out to parties in the evening, not telling Dad where we were going.
Yeah.
You know, we were not allowed to go out.
Yeah.
At the age of 15 or 16, that Pink Floyd was on. And then I was hearing that and brought back a flood of memories.
Mm-hmm.
So those things will always be there. So that means your... life where you grow up in the first 18 years matters a whole lot for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
And you'll always reminisce about it regardless of how happy you are anywhere else.
Yeah. So are you happy? You haven't answered that question.
No, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I would have been... But there are a lot of issues here. Not necessarily the fact that I'm in America. You know, if I had a supportive environment, I had a... At this stage of my life, I'm looking, you know, looking for more than just a career and a good living. I'm looking for a meaning, looking for a meaningful career which would give out rather than take in, like, you know, public health, have a family. Those things are becoming more and more crucial as the years are going by.
But that's not, what you're saying is that's not necessarily tied to being here or being in Bangladesh right now.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would define myself completely complete only when I have a very meaningful career and a conducive home life.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to step back into my country every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now that is what I would strive as my ideal situation of living. Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I was very honest. I had to say what I had to say, so I don't know if it would mean anything, but when you ask those questions, I have to speak from my heart.
No, that's exactly what we're looking for in this. And like I said, if at any point in this process, you know, if you're uncomfortable about something, we can always scrap it, we can...
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, but this is going to be anonymous, so we are trying to get really people's honest reactions, and it's sort of trying to bring them together to see themes across different interviews. And like you yourself said, that if we were to go out and talk to other South Asians, which we are doing and we've done, a lot of the same themes are probably emerging, that although people are materially satisfied, there's a certain longing for being back in their own country. So I really appreciate the honesty, because that's what we're going for, and this will be completely confidential. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. But even if it isn't, I still would like to, you know, say what I believe is what I feel.
Well, thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.